and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And so the show, we're doing a deep dive on the dollar for dollar exemption under the LVR restrictions. Oh, this is going to be a good show. So first of all, let's talk about why you as a property investor need to know about the dollar for dollar exemption. So look, if you buy an investment property using your own home as security to fund that deposit, then on settlement of that investment property, if you're buying new, then it can take up more of your usable equity than you initially intended. And actually, do you know what? It doesn't just affect people buying new. It can affect a whole heap of people who have recently bought. But we'll get into that. So let me give you an example of what I mean by this. So let's bring in that nice sound effect. Let's imagine we're using our imagination. You've got an 800K, don't shake your head at me. You've got an 800K house with a 340K mortgage. Now, what that means is you can borrow up to 640K against your house.
So that's 80%.
That's 80%, correct. Now, take off your 340K mortgage and you've still got 300K that you can borrow against your house to invest with.
Which we call usable equity.
That's right. We also call it dead money. We call it lazy money. Whole heap of other things. This is how most people fund the deposits for their investment properties. Now, if you've got 300K of that lazy money, that usable equity, you can invest up to $1.5 million. So let's say that you go and buy one property with 750K. And let's say this is a brand new off the plans property. So you need 150K deposit, 20% deposit. All good, you do that. So you're thinking, well, that's great. I've used half of what I can potentially borrow to go buy this house. I might wait 3 months, 6 months, see how the market goes, might buy another one. So you think, sweet, I'm able to go buy another one. But the day that that property settles, if you trigger another credit assessment through that bank, you would need a 40% deposit once the new LVR restrictions come in the 1st of May. So rather than taking up 150K of usable equity, that property, when you trigger that credit assessment in order to go and purchase another property, which is usually when that would happen, you've now got to have 300K worth of equity within that investment property through that credit assessment. So where does that come from?
Comes from your existing usable equity. So all of a sudden you've gone from using 150 of your 300 to using all 300. So you're exhausted.
So what's the strategy to keep investing?
So if you've done this, it's okay. There is a way around this and it's called refinancing under the dollar for dollar exemption rule. So because the Reserve Bank put these provisions in place to slow down investors with their investing, they haven't put it in place to stop competitiveness within banks. So if they did that, then of course, if you're trapped with BNZ, next time you go for an interest rate renewal, they might say, well, actually it's 7%. Sorry, you can't move it. But because of the fact that they want to allow you to still get the best deal, you can move your loan dollar for dollar to another bank without there being any LVR restrictions. So what that means is if I've got 750 with BNZ and my main loan is with BNZ, I can take my investment loan to another bank. Now, if that property is still only worth 750, the new bank, say Westpac, might only lend me 80%, which would be pretty normal, but they can do 80% of the 750, which means that it only leaves 20%, the original 150 usable equity against your home. The great news is there, you still have 150 worth of usable equity that you can go and then use on another purchase. So you've actually created that usable equity again.
Now let's talk about how these LVR restrictions actually work in practice. So what the LVR restrictions say is that 95% of new investor lending must have at least a 40% deposit. So let's talk about how these LVR restrictions actually work in practice. So what they say is that 95% of all new bank lending to investors must have at least a 40% deposit. If this LVR restriction didn't exist, you wouldn't then be able to pick up that investment property with an 80% loan, so a 20% deposit, and move it across to another bank because they'd be lending you new money in order to move that across and you would have less than a 40% deposit. But that is where the dollar for dollar exemption comes in. So when you move that across and the new bank lends out the money to you, that's not counted towards that LVR formula, that 95% of lending, which must have a 40% deposit. Doesn't come into that calculation at all. That's the same with the new builds. Any new build lending just isn't counted towards that restriction that is placed on the banks. And that's why you can pick it up as if it was when you purchased with a 20% deposit and just move it across to another bank. So what I want to ask you though, is like, if I move that property to another bank, on the day it settles, it's still in essence got negative usable equity in there. So if I've moved that investment property over to a different bank, let's say it was with ASB, it's now with ANZ. If I wanted to borrow against that investment property, then ANZ would now tell me, well, you've got negative usable equity, you've got negative deposit available within that property. How come when I want to go and borrow more money off ASB, then perhaps where my owner-occupier is, how come they're not looking at the investment property over there? How come they're not looking at that negative deposit I've got over there?
So the banks only look at their position, and that's all they're required to do. So they need to make sure that their position is within the parameters set out by the Reserve Bank. If you've separated it, that doesn't actually matter. And actually, a good example of this is an investor that I'm working with right now who's sold his own house and is buying a new owner-occupied house. Now, he was struggling to get his head around this because when we set up his investment property, he structured that where he put that with a second bank. So he split bank. So the bank allowed him to borrow 80%. BNZ gave him 80% against the rental property because it was a new build. The remainder 20% he got from his original bank. Now he's sold his owner-occupied property and is required to pay two things back. He's required to pay his personal mortgage back and he's required to pay the investment deposit loan because both of those are secured by his own home. When he draws down his new mortgage, what we're going to do is we're going to redraw that deposit loan, $125,000 we'll call it, and he'll draw down the balance as his own personal mortgage. Now, it was hard to get his head around the fact that, okay, well, over here you've got BNZ and they've got 80%, but the new rules are 60%. They don't come into it. They don't get a say in this. They don't get to reach over here and take out some extra equity. If it's with one bank, absolutely they do. But in this instance, the credit trigger is with a bank that is an acceptable LVR position, so it doesn't matter.
And I guess what's important to talk about is, well, why does this exemption exist? Now, Andrew's already talked about the fact that we still need to encourage competition between the banks. If you've followed the LVR restrictions in the past, and now when you trigger a credit assessment, you can't borrow as much as your own home, the purpose of these LVR restrictions isn't to penalise you for what you've done in the past. So you can still move them across so you are able to meet the bank's restrictions. And just talk us through, who are the sorts of people that might need to use a strategy like this dollar for dollar refinancing?
If you bought a new property and you've got 80% from your bank and you've done it all with one bank, then maybe this is a good opportunity for you to review these things and see if you can move 80% of the loan or thereabouts across to another bank. If the property values have gone up, you might even be able to move 80% of the new value, leaving a less than 20% deposit against your own house. So that will free up more usable equity. Also, this could be really useful if you bought in that kind of 6-month window when the Reserve Bank said LVR restrictions are gone, you can do what you like, and you went out and bought an existing property with a 20% deposit. So if you were managed to fit within that window and it didn't really pull any extra usable equity against your house, now that these restrictions have come back on, great time to start moving stuff across again so it's not pulling extra usable equity against your house. Because again, if the bank approved you based on 80% of the new property, 20% against yours, now that they've brought these LVR restrictions back in, then now it is 40% against your house in the event that you go and apply for new lending. If you bought more than 12 months ago, then obviously the increased equity in your rental property, if you've had a spike in prices there, might actually negate the need to do this. But again, you can still move that property at the new value. So say, for example, you bought a property for $500,000, it's now gone to $600,000, you got a $500,000 mortgage with your bank, you can move across 80% of $600,000, which is $480,000, which means only $20,000 is against your house. So I think having the limited amount of debt against your house supporting your rentals is a great thing to do.
Now, something that new property investors ask is, look, if my investment property has let's call it negative usable equity. So I settled it with a 20% deposit. That was what was required at the time. LVR restrictions change. Now I need a 40% deposit. Do I need to top up the deposit or top up the equity within that investment property? And the answer is no. It only stops you from investing more when you have a credit assessment that has been triggered because perhaps you're looking for new property. So you don't have to worry about that. Though one thing that I want to ask you, Andrew, is that if I'm using a revolving credit to set up my split banking, is there a risk that the bank could call that loan in if the market turned downwards?
I think there is a risk with that kind of thing, and it's something to always be aware of. So personally, I prefer in those instances to use an offset mortgage, which are just structured slightly differently. So I can draw down that loan in, and then if I want to put some extra money against that in my savings, then it's still a table loan. So that's probably what I'd recommend instead. Certainly, if you fall under business banking or commercial banking, you'll often have review dates and they are annually. So in the event that you go in and the criteria has changed, you will probably find that they will be encouraging you to reduce that revolving credit limit and find money from somewhere else, either by selling assets or bringing in cash.
Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Eb McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.